interviewing Jeffrey M. Smith with his new book, Genetic Roulette, The Documented Health Risk of Genetically Engineered Foods. Jeffrey and I had a great conversation on his bestseller, Seeds of Deception, Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of Genetically Engineered Foods You're Eating. And we're real pleased to have him back. Jeffrey, I don't know if you remember, I'm the doctor that introduced the idea that perhaps Morgellons disease might be linked to genetically modified foods, and I have some more information for you on that topic.
Excellent, excellent.
But anyway, welcome. Are you still living in Iowa?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I love, I'm on your Seeds of Deception website, and I guess it's actually www.geneticroulette.com.
Well, there's several of them. I have two different sites. I've got,
oh, do you? Okay.
I've got responsibletechnology.org, which is for our institute, which
right.
has a campaign for healthier eating in America. And then to get to seedsofdeception.com, you can do Seeds of Deception or the name of my other book, Genetic Roulette. They both bring you to the same place.
Well, the responsibletechnology.org is a fabulous site with really the best education I've found on how to avoid GMO foods, because of course all of my Morgellons patients want to know how to do it, and I just send them to your site because
right.
I don't see anything better on the internet. So anyway, on this bio, it says you live with your wife in Iowa, surrounded by genetically modified soybeans and corn.
Isn't that ironic?
That's lovely.
Everyone in Iowa basically floats in a sea of GMOs. We've got.
Yeah, and that can by itself be dangerous.
I mean, in the Philippines, a whole village of about 100 people woke up one day after breathing in the pollen from the newly pollinating genetically
right.
engineered corn. And actually, it wasn't the same day. It was over a period of a couple of days. The people living closest to the field and then further and further away got sick.
Mm-hmm.
They even sent someone into the field to see what was going on. His face swelled up, and he had trouble breathing. And they took the same type of seeds and planted it in four other villages, and the same thing happened during the time of pollination. So the pollen of genetically engineered crops may also carry some of these dangers.
So you might be out riding your bicycle or taking a walk in the woods or whatever and come near one of these fields and have a potentially life-threatening allergic reaction, theoretically.
Well, I do think that these Filipino seeds were unique in that we don't see the kind of horrendous problems and acute problems here that we saw there. But you see, it demonstrates the possibility that the seeds are unstable and that whether it's year to year or various varieties can have unpredicted side effects, as has been described by the scientific literature for a long time. So we're really playing with a kind of a genetic roulette, hoping that the inserted genes don't rearrange or their expression isn't changed in some way, and that could affect the health of both the people breathing the pollen and eating the plant.
And that brings us to the whole thing about assumptions being made by the industry, Monsanto being one of the companies, but Bayer is another, and there are some very household word companies are making some assumptions about GMO and using these assumptions to get past regulatory agencies and get the products to market very quickly before their patents expire. And you want to address the assumptions and how the whole industry is kind of slipped these under the radar?
Exactly. In fact, it is basically an assumptions-based approval system, not based on real sound science. But on the underlying fabric of that, and we'll go into some of the scientific assumptions, but underlying that is actually deception. And the deceptive line in the FDA policy is that the agency was not aware of any information showing that genetically engineered foods are significantly different. And that was a complete fabrication, total fiction.
Mm-hmm.
The time that was written, we now know that the overwhelming consensus among the FDA's own scientists were that GMOs were significantly different and could create allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. They had urged their superiors to require long-term safety studies, but based on the fabricated sentence, the political appointees said no safety studies are necessary. In fact, companies can introduce GM crops without even telling the government.
Right.
Now,
so the FDA doesn't even have to approve anything.
Right. They don't actually ever approve a GM crop. They simply
mm-hmm.
have a voluntary consultation process, at the end of which they write a letter to the company saying, that the company believes it's safe, and therefore the FDA does not have to do any actual approval. One of the assumptions that's very interesting, I'll give two assumptions that make it clear the kind of dangers. The first assumption is that the crops that are engineered to produce this BT toxin to kill pests is safe. Now, BT toxin is used in organic agriculture, conventional agriculture, forestry as a natural bacterial, soil bacterium, and it's sprayed on crops to kill pests.
Right.
So what the biotechnologists do is they take the gene from the soil bacteria, make some changes, and put it into corn and cotton, and then they assume that the BT is safe because it has a history of safe use. They assume it only will kill insects, and it won't have any impact on humans.
Right.
It turns out those assumptions are totally false. BT toxin in its natural form has caused at least 500 people to have allergic-type reactions. Mm-hmm. In its natural form, when fed to mice, causes damaged intestines and immune response. But in when it's put into the crops, it's actually thousands of times more concentrated, and it's designed to be more toxic. Now, people in India who are picking the cotton genetically engineered to produce this toxin are complaining of the same allergic reactions as those who were sprayed with the natural form. Animals that eat the cotton plants after harvest are dying by the thousands or tens of thousands. There's farmers in the United States that say certain varieties have caused their pigs or cows to become sterile. German farmer describes death among his cows. In the Philippines, they have four different types of livestock that supposedly died from this BT corn. We have Austrian and Italian research, government research that came out last month showing BT corn linked to both infertility, problems with the health of the offspring, and immune response. And even Monsanto's own study shows immune response and toxicity in relation to rats eating genetically engineered corn. So this whole concept that you can put this deadly toxin into the food supply with no effect on humans is a bad assumption and very dangerous.
It doesn't make sense with common sense either. It's a toxin.
Exactly, and it's bioactive in humans. The second
thing
that's an assumption, which is actually related, the FDA's documents made public from a lawsuit showed that the Division of Anti-Infective Drugs was very, very concerned about the possibility of genes transferring from genetically engineered crops into the bacteria living inside our intestines. And they were concerned about the antibiotic resistant marker genes that are used in GM crops, which could create theoretically super diseases untreatable by antibiotics. But the assumptions that were used by the political appointees was that, and it was voiced upon them by the biotech industry, was that genes are destroyed during digestion and therefore cannot transfer into the DNA of gut bacteria. Well, the only human feeding study ever conducted on genetically engineered foods found that the genes that had been inserted into soybeans ended up transferring into the DNA of the bacteria inside our intestines and continued to function. Now, this means long after we stop eating genetically engineered crops, we may still have these foreign genetically engineered proteins produced inside of us. So we might end up having these super diseases that are untreatable with antibiotics. But let's combine the first risk with the BT toxin with the second. Imagine eating a corn chip that's genetic from corn that's genetically engineered to produce this BT toxin. Now imagine if the gene from the corn chip transfers into the DNA of our gut bacteria, it might transform it into a living pesticide factory inside us, possibly for the rest of our lives.
Not being able to get it out with anything, not even antibiotics, if it's also got the antibiotics.
That's true. We're making little monsters. I hadn't thought of that. Brilliant. Now, it's interesting, when I talk at medical conferences, and I do a lot, and I talk about the disruption of gut bacteria, many doctors come up to me or raise the point from the floor that they've seen a lot of gastrointestinal problems in the U.S. in the last 12 years, which may be traceable to the introduction of genetically engineered foods in 1996.
That's true. And some of, I wanted to go back to Morgallon for a minute. Sitowski has done some research on Morgellons patients and has tested, I don't know exactly how many patients he's tested, but he's found in all of them the DNA of Agrobacterium, which has been used in the development of GMO foods. And evidently some of it got out and got into the soil as well. And Agrobacterium is able to insert DNA into other genomes. That's what it was used for in GMO. And then it was killed with this antibiotic solution, as you probably know. But evidently some of it got out. Many, many patients are saying they get this disease after being in sand or soil, you know, handling the sand or soil. So it may be that the Agrobacterium is in that area. The other thing that's interesting is that I mentioned this before, that at least one of my patients and several of my other patients say that their disease gets much better after they stop all GMO food intake, which of course is not that easy to do, as you know.
Yes.
You have to go pretty much organic and be very, very careful about what you eat.
It's very interesting about Agrobacterium. What happens is there's this bacterium that smuggles its own genes into crops to cause tumors.
Right.
And what the biotechnologists do is they take out the tumor-creating gene and put in whatever gene they want, and then the Agrobacterium smuggles that in.
Right.
And Maiwan Ho, a scientist from the UK, for years had been complaining that Agrobacterium put out there in large numbers through this process could end up being very, very dangerous. And it may be that Morgellons disease is the unfortunate fulfillment of her warning.
The Dr. Staninger, who's an environmental toxicologist who I've had on the show many times, feels that the Agrobacterium may actually be inserting insect and parasite genome into the human genome, so it's produced inside the body. My patients describe like a sore, or one of my patients this week described, she rubbed her eye and then a tiny little insect flew out of where she rubbed. And then other people say that insects fly out of previously, once the little lesion gets exposed, then things fly out of it. And the researchers looking at Morgellons see not only very tiny insects, you know, little tiny wasps and little tiny things that are not really natural, but they also see insect pieces. And there is a site called Superbug, I think it's superbug.com, that actually shows this growing in cell culture and shows the formation of wings and parts of insects. So at least this lab shows that it can be done in a petri dish.
Wow.
So, but this disease is so bizarre. I mean, I treat probably a couple hundred patients with this all over. And Iowa is a state that has quite a bit of Morgellons.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes. And, we don't know exactly. I just have a very, very strong suspicion that something, well, I know GMO foods make the disease worse clinically, because when you remove them, the patients report they get better. However, the question, 100% of patients have had the DNA of Agrobacterium, which in normal population, I think it's down around 20% or so. So that's a smoking gun that needs to be looked at. Of course, there's also potential pressure against the scientists making these discoveries.
Oh, yeah.
And Zatowski has, if you look at his stuff on the Internet, he is very careful not to make this connection. In fact, he says that connection cannot be made. The GMO foods are unsafe. So I guess, he probably got spoken to in some way to be careful, or maybe his attorney told him to be careful. But anyway, I just think it's interesting as a physician looking at, interviewing you, reading your books, which are great information, and then going back and trying to, clinically see if it makes a difference, and it does. So, I don't know. One thing that it occurred to me last night, probably, immune deficiency is found across the board in Morgellons, a pre-existing immune deficiency. So patients who've had chemotherapy, patients with sick building syndrome, patients with silicone chemical toxicity, which I treat a lot of, patients with Lyme's disease and other intracellular spirochete diseases, often get Morgellons disease. So couldn't it be that patients who eat a lot of GMO foods and lower their immunity via the mechanisms you just spoke of also be at risk for Morgellons?
It's certainly possible. There's one other interesting thing in that when they typically take a gene from a species and they put it inside a plasmid or a DNA circle and they make millions of copies of it, and these days they cut away just the gene that they want to insert and put, you know, make millions of copies and put it into a gene gun or into Agrobacterium and send it in.
Mm-hmm.
But what's happening is a few years ago, sometimes they would just leave random pieces of bacteria on the transgene when they put it in, so that the food that we're eating contains not just the intended transgene, but sort of pieces of bacteria as well.
Mm-hmm.
That has been multiplied by the zillions in every bite of these types of foods. So it's possible that they may have a reaction also, because bacterial genes can be kind of unpredicted. But the whole thing about a pre-existing condition for an immune system, I mean, imagine that someone has repopulated or colonized their gut bacteria or their own DNA with some of these gene constructs that we're eating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is kind of a genetic roulette. We don't know what's going to go on. The promoter, which is what turns on the gene, when they create a GMO, they take a gene from one species, typically bacteria, and they take an on switch from a virus called cauliflower mosaic virus, and that turns the gene on permanently, high volume, 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that promoter, turns out, can also turn on other genes at random, permanently, at high volume.
Not a good idea.
No, it's true. It's like throwing a dart into the DNA and saying, now you're on forever.
Right,
now you're
right.
On forever. Now, when they did that only human feeding study, they found that the promoter transferred to the gut bacteria along with the inserted gene.
Right. So
now
the gut bacteria doing that.
Right. So the gut bacteria might now have more than just that gene function. It could have something else. But what if that promoter transfers to our own DNA? It could turn on something at random.
Yeah.
In addition, there's two other things. There's the possibility that some ancient virus, you know, we have these old ancient viruses
mm-hmm.
from previous species that have been embedded themselves into the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Most are degraded, but some may be intact, but simply not switched on.
Right.
So there's a theory that this on switch could end up just upstream from some ancient virus and
mm-hmm.
flip it on, and it'll be unleashing an ancient monster from a previous era. Also, the promoter has what's called a recombinant hotspot, which means it's unstable. So if it gets inserted into any genome, it might cause instability, causing spontaneous recombination
mm-hmm.
of the DNA. So what we're talking about is made potential disruption of the normal functioning of the DNA, of our DNA if it gets in there, or if of our bacterial DNA inside our system. And, you know, any problem that might face could certainly be exacerbated by individuals with immune dysfunction.
Yeah, probably in the future, people living in the future are going to look back on this and say that genetically engineered foods were a particularly bad idea.
I think we can do that. I think we don't have
right
to wait
now.
Too far for that, yeah. I mean, if we just go through a rundown of what we have found, in my book, Genetic Roulette, we document 65 health risks.
Mm-hmm.
The first 20 are adverse findings, which include thousands of sick, sterile, and dead livestock, thousands of toxic and allergic reactions, damage to virtually every organ and every system studied. And the other 45, we show theoretical risks, also demonstrating many of the numerous assumptions that were used as a basis for safety claims, which have proven untrue. So we end up with a situation where animals have had potentially precancerous cell growth, stomach lesions, lesions of the kidneys and liver. In one study, more than half of the offspring of rats fed genetically engineered soy died within 3 weeks. We have smaller organs, bigger organs, immune responses, you know, it's completely across
mm-hmm.
the board. And as you said, those that have discovered the problems are often silenced in very creative ways, fired from their job, losing funding, transferred, threatened, gagged. These we describe in Seeds of Deception and in also subsequent articles written on my newsletter, which is found at seedsofdeception.com. So there's a huge effort to protect this multi-billion dollar investment by pretending that there's no risk to public health.
It's very interesting, too. In your book, you note that the insurance industry has had a very interesting reaction to all of this.
Oh, yeah.
Would you like to share that? Because I'm going to tell you something. The insurance industry assesses risk for a living. I mean, I don't necessarily assess risk. You don't assess risk, but they do. And what do they say about genetically modified foods?
Well, I think that was... Remind me of the sentence, like compared to asbestos and acts of war or something.
It's like, yeah.
It's like they...
Right up there with terrorism.
Yeah, terrorism, asbestos, acts of war. They realize that that the risk is so huge.
They're not touching it.
Yeah, they don't... It's like you're feeding the products of an infant science to millions of people, and
right.
It's into the environment where it can never be recalled. I just wrote a blog for Huffington Post yesterday that describes, I said... In a few hundred thousand years after the weather effects of global warming have gone, after the remaining nuclear waste smolder has, hit its last ember, we still may have the impacts of the Bush administration policies in the form of genetic mutations that self-propagate.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good point. You know, once this stuff cross-pollinates or gets out accidentally with a seed company mixing things up or... Yeah, there's just all sorts of things that can happen. You can't get it back.
Yes.
And what's interesting is that the genetic engineers have really no clue as to what the subsequent effects are going to be. Not just it getting out, but once it gets out, what will it do? It's there's an unknown factor beyond that we don't even know, what it could produce in the future.
And the thing is, we get little hints from time to time, like there was a study that came out showing that this BT toxin is interfering with the ecosystem of marine wildlife, killing water fleas or causing them to be sick. And, you know, we were putting this BT toxin in millions and millions of acres. So it gets into the soil bacteria, it kills, it binds with the clay and stays active for months or years. It has a negative effect on the mycorrhizal fungi. And then it's also possible that when the crops are broken down, the bacteria that breaks it down picks up these foreign genes, and now we have equipped, untold armies of bacteria and/or microorganisms with genes that we produced in laboratories. So we're really playing with nature in a way that we never had the capacity to do before, and there's nothing else in our lives and in our civilization that carries quite this type of risk.
Yeah, let's jump forward, too, to talk about, and since what GMO foods were introduced in the 80s, is that right?
Well, the foods themselves, there was a genetically engineered food supplement that was introduced in they used genetically engineered bacteria to produce L-tryptophan.
That didn't turn out well.
No, about 100 people died and 5 to 10,000 fell sick, and the FDA withheld the information from Congress so that they never knew that it was genetically engineered bran that caused the problem.
Yeah, and they just outlawed all L-tryptophan, which is stupid.
Yeah.
Because it's useful.
Of course. And then in 94, they allowed milk from cows that had been injected with genetically modified bovine growth hormone on the market, and then the tomato came on, and then 96, the big four, 96 and 7, the big four, soy, corn, cotton, and canola.
So basically people need to look for soy oil, canola oil.
Cottonseed oil.
Cottonseed oil.
And then soy and corn derivatives, whether it's oil or flours or...
Yeah.
High fructose corn syrup. Now there's two new GMOs on the market this year. Sugar beets, creating sugar from genetically engineered sugar beets. So if you buy something that contains sugar and it doesn't say pure cane sugar, very soon it will have a component that's genetically engineered.
And that's going to be in everything. I mean, all processed foods will potentially have that in it.
And also, that used to be just yellow corn, but white corn was planted this year and is harvested. Hawaiian papaya, zucchini, and crookneck squash.
Right.
Now, the Hawaiian papaya, zucchini, and crookneck squash are engineered for disease resistance with genes from viruses. Mm-hmm. Now, the proteins that are produced by viral genes can theoretically deprive or suppress immune defenses.
Mm-hmm.
So eating these genetically engineered crops can, might theoretically make it easier to contract a disease. They might also interrupt basic cell function, which could lead to things like cancer. So if those genes transferred into our gut bacteria, we might have a consistently compromised immune defense system against viruses. So it's a very, very serious potential problem.
Well, we have a lot of practitioners in our clinic. We have a chiropractor that does NAIT or the allergy elimination technique. We have family practice. We have GYN, surgeons, medicine, the whole thing. And what we're seeing is a very significant increase in food allergies.
Oh, yeah.
And since the 90s. And also an increase in, this is widespread now, a glucose, insulin resistance in patients where their glucoses are coming up, into not diabetic range, but even in children. So it's like an insulin resistance, food allergies, ADD, of course. I mean, I don't know how old you are. I'm 54, so when I went to elementary school, we didn't have ADD. it wasn't even known.
Right.
And the kids didn't have it either. I mean, there was maybe one or two bad players that had behavioral problems, but they were more social-related than ADD-related.
Well, so, I can speak to the allergies easily. I've heard connections to the insulin that's a little more obscure detail.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a chance to get to look into it, but there is possible clear relationships there as well. And I will say that we have a new portable shopping guide and a health risks brochure. The two together make excellent patient education material.
Okay,
so you can go
great.
To our site and pick them up at cost, or if you look at the October newsletter, it tells you how you can get your local health food store to get them for free.
Okay,
and
great.
Then you can just get as many as you want through the health food store. And again, it's a little pocket shopping guide for non-GMO
mm-hmm.
eating and also a little brochure why to avoid GMOs. As far as the allergies go, there's a lot of reasons why GMOs might create allergies. Soon after GM soy was introduced to the UK, soy allergies skyrocketed by 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we look at soy, we know that there's a known allergen called trypsin inhibitor, which is as much as 7 times higher in cooked soy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a skin prick test that was done finding at least one patient that had a reaction only to the GM soy and not to the non-GM soy. So they looked inside the proteins in the soy and they found a completely new protein, never intended or expected,
mm-hmm.
and that was also able to bind with IgE antibodies, which means that it might be the allergen that's causing the problems. The soy also has higher levels of herbicide residues from Roundup herbicide because the soy is engineered not to die when sprayed with Roundup herbicide,
mm-hmm.
and the Roundup herbicide might cause the problems. The Roundup Ready protein, which creates that trait, that has properties of a dust mite allergen, so that might be an allergy. In addition, they fed soy to mice, and the mice's pancreatic enzymes were suppressed. Now, if you have a reduction in protein-digesting enzymes, it gives more time for the protein to survive and cause an allergic reaction. So eating genetically engineered soy might create allergic reactions to a wide variety of proteins, not just soy. In fact, starting the year after soy was introduced for the next 5 years, peanut allergies doubled in the United States.
Hmm.
And we know that soy has a cross-reactivity with peanut allergies. A small percentage of people that have peanut allergies can get allergic reactions from eating soy. It's possible that all the collateral damage that resulted from the process of genetically engineering the soy might have enhanced that cross-reactivity. So I'm just rattling these off to show, and they're all, slowly explained carefully in the book Genetic Roulette,
mm-hmm.
but we don't have time for that. But I'm just giving you, this kind of a rapid-fire idea. There are so many ways that genetically engineered soy might be responsible not only for an increase in soy allergies, but an increase of allergies across the board. Then you have another study showed that mice were exposed to one variety of genetically engineered peas, and they became sensitive to other harmless compounds that had not previously elicited a response, so a kind of a multiple chemical sensitivity.
And we're seeing so much of that now.
Yes, and that's also a possible result from this BT toxin.
Right.
So we're seeing it in the laboratory, and if we saw the similar thing in humans, we would be seeing that eating one thing gives us sensitivity to a whole array of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that could easily be traced to soy and corn, except it's not being traced because the research is not being done to follow up.
Yeah, it's interesting. A study came out showing that patients that took H2 receptor inhibitors, like, all the things given for reflux, had 500 times the rate of food allergy. And I think that's interesting because you don't know if decreased acid was responsible for that. It could be because acid breaks down protein, obviously.
Right.
Or maybe there's a, in science, you know, you have to know, understand there could be a common factor causing both A and B. You know, A, you can't always say A causes B. You have to say, well, is there, another factor above both of them causing both of them?
Well,
and so I'm just wondering if GMOs could cause reflux and food allergies, you know?
Well, we'd be the winner then.
Yeah, really.
The other thing is that gut bacteria plays an important role in protecting the transfer of proteins into the blood system.
Right, and leaky gut syndrome.
Right, and if that breaks down, then you get these potential immune responses and to the pieces, the undigested pieces of food and all that. And so you can end up with a whole immune disorder associated
mm-hmm.
with gut bacteria. And the gut bacteria thing is also important with just general allergies. And so I don't know if the acid reflux treatment can compromise the gut bacteria, but certainly if it does,
mm-hmm.
that could be an underlying factor as well.
Yeah, and the patients with leaky gut syndrome, first of all, you know you have it because you get really, really tired or sick about 2 hours after you eat. And then if you fast, you feel wonderful because your fasting decreases your level of circulating immune complexes to virtually nothing because, of course, nothing is going through that leaky gut. So if you, that's a great way to determine if you really have this problem. And then fixing it, replacing the gut flora, repairing the gut wall with glutamine and other things, and basically killing off any dysbiosis or fungi in there that aren't doing you any good. So, but it's a complex problem and it's a very common problem. I mean, I think we see it a lot in the clinic. But now I'm going to put GMO foods up there as something to avoid when you have this, when you start eating again, to stay away from GMO foods.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing is, when you realize how many things could be going wrong with a GM food, you realize you're gambling with your health in every bite. But what I'm very interested to hear is the fact that some of your patients feel a lot better when they avoid it.
Yeah.
And we were hoping to do kind of studies like that, especially
mm-hmm.
the school switches from normal junk food to a non-GMO based diet. We'd love to see the differences in the general population, not just the population of those that have disease or problems.
And I think the public needs to understand what a great role they have in terms of either buying a product or not buying a product, especially because it seems I was looking on responsible technology, is it .org? Yes,
yeah.
.org. And saw that, you know, like certain companies will always have the GMO or genetically modified foods, and then other ones like Amy's and some of the other brands never have it. So I think just choosing brands that are aware of the issue and not choosing brands that are not aware of the issue, I think that will speak volumes. So I really think it might come down to a grassroots, educational thing, which of course you're doing. It just like the Monsanto growth hormone in the cows was kind of swayed by public opinion.
Absolutely, Monsanto sold it recently to Eli Lilly because they realized it's being phased out of the entire food supply because consumers have been educated over the last 3 or 4 years about the health dangers
mm-hmm.
of dairy products from cows that have been injected with bovine growth hormone.
Right.
Especially the IGF-1 or insulin-like growth factor 1 hormone in
mm-hmm.
these dairy products, which is increased in human beings when you take the dairy products, and high levels of IGF-1 is linked very, very closely with cancer, as well as high rates of fraternal twins. So since the information's come out about the dangers, Walmart banned it from their milk, Starbucks, Subway, Publix, Kroger's, and once
you do all of them, you might as well just give it up.
Right, exactly. So we were part of the coalition of groups that were been educating public about
it.
So the tipping point was actually an engineered tipping point. It wasn't random. And we're now focusing on getting a tipping point against GMOs. And we calculate that a tipping point against GMOs will not require a very high percentage of consumers to avoid GM brands, because GMOs do not give any consumer benefit. The only traits from the big four products are the fact that they either produce their own pesticide or not die when sprayed with herbicide. So it doesn't even increase yield on average. On average, it lowers yield. So there's no subset of consumers saying, boy, I really want my GMO gravy or I want my
GMO.
And so if we can demonstrate that it's become a marketing liability to the major food companies, then
they'll quit buying it.
Yeah, exactly.
The farmers will quit growing it.
So that's happened in Europe, where within a single week when they hit the tipping point, virtually every major food company committed to stop using GM ingredients there. And so we expect to hit the tipping point by the end of 2009 by circulating information about the health dangers and giving people clear non-GMO choices.
Yeah, the one that bothers me is the sugar beets.
I know.
Sugar's in everything.
And
what if it contaminates all the other sugar beets?
And soy and corn derivatives are
in everything
right now, too. So yeah. I would say if it's a boxed or processed food, I would say there's 90% chance that it contains a GMO if it's not organic.
Yeah, and like I said, just going to your site and looking at your shopping list thing that is so nicely done, you can just pick out they're indelled in my mind now, the companies that are, like, always possibly GMO and the ones that aren't. So, you know, it's basically just a public education.
Yeah, people, I'm hoping to walk around. I do a lot of traveling in the 30 countries and all over the United States. I'm hoping to walk into some of these health food stores and see groups of people walking down the aisle with my little pocket shopping guide, you know, looking at the brands. And you see, that's going to happen. We're putting non-GMO education centers in natural food stores around the country, which contain the shopping guide and the health risks brochure, as well as books and DVDs.
Yeah.
And we are distributing the patient education materials through doctor's offices. We're distributing information to religious organizations, through schools. So we believe we're equipping people so that they can make the decisions that they've wanted to make for years, because more than half of Americans say they would avoid GMOs if they were labeled.
Right.
95% want it labeled. Now, even though Obama says he's going to label it, and I have a petition on my site asking his labeling to be comprehensive and meaningful, we're not going to wait for that to kick in. We're going to take steps now to prevent GMOs in our diet.
So what has happened with some of these companies that felt that they were going to dominate the world market? I mean, how has that played out for them?
Well, in 1999, at the end of January, there was a biotech conference where it was revealed that Monsanto's ideal future and their goals that their plans were designed to achieve was to gain 100% of all commercialized seeds to be turned into genetically engineered seeds around the world. And that another company projected a 95% conversion of all natural seeds to genetically engineered seeds within 5 years. Well, 3 weeks later, there was a doctor who had been silenced with a lawsuit, fired from his job after 35 years, and maligned in the press for 7 solid months. This was in England, in Scotland, because he had spoken out against GMOs. Actually, what he had done is, working on a UK government grant, he discovered that GMOs were dangerous. They caused massive damage in rats that were fed GM potatoes, and it was not the specific insecticide that the potatoes were engineered to produce that caused the problem. It was the generic process of genetic engineering, the very process that was used already in crops on the market. So he had a complete smoking gun against
for
the
everything.
Entire food industry that was using GMOs, and he was completely silenced. But on February 16th of 99, the gag order was lifted, and within a week, 159 column feet of articles were written. Within a month, 750 articles. The society, according to one editor, was divided into two warring blocks on GMOs. And by April of 1999, the tipping point was achieved. And in the last week of that month, Unilever publicly committed to stop using GM ingredients, and by within 3 days, so did everyone else.
Right.
So what happened to their ideal future, their plans to replace the, to replace nature, was that the top of the food chain, consumers, got wind of it and said no. Now, in the United States, we have very little coverage on GMOs, and the biotech industry is still moving forward. They have field tested about 173 or more different species of crops already in experimental trials and more than 50,000 field trials in the United States. And they're waiting to introduce everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't, if we let our guard down, and we're afraid,
we'll probably be the sickest nation on the planet.
Yes.
It's kind of like the fall of Rome, you know. They said Rome fell because of all the lead and the pewter that, that everybody was drinking. I mean, it's, that's how, that, but that's the kind of thing that brings a civilization down. It really is.
Yeah.
If your populace is too sick to work and, is not able to function, then that's what happens. So it is very important that we, educate everybody and move ahead. Did you see the, article? It was published in the Popular Press that 8 FDA scientists got together and were acting as whistleblowers on the FDA administration?
No.
Yeah, that was in the press. You know, I take care of all these patients with silicone poisoning, so I was glad to see that silicone was one of the things that they said was, the science was ignored on when they, you know, reintroduced it to the market. And I thought of you and the genetically modified foods as probably a big part of that, but it, they didn't mention that. But I think that that might be some other influence still at
work.
Well,
I have talked to a whistleblower from the FDA, and he had been fired when he tried to get more studies on bovine growth hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And he described the whole horrible story. I created a film with, he's in the film. It's called Your Milk on Drugs.
Oh, no. Yeah.
If you go to yourmilkondrugs.com, you can see the 18-minute film, and you could see Dr. Richard Burroughs, a veterinarian, describe how the research was basically rigged to avoid finding problems, and how the approvals were based on a sham, and he was just escorted out, essentially, when he was holding up the process of approval. And in addition, not only was he fired, but there was a couple of reporters from Fox Television in Florida that had done a 4-part news series on RBGH, this is the bovine growth hormone, and they were fired because they refused to lie on television.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole long trail of whistleblowers associated with not only the bovine growth hormone, but also GMOs.
Well, I think there's a great deal of hope that with the new administration coming in, that this might change and reintroduce science into the FDA, which I was thinking when you were talking earlier, we might just have to call it the DA since it's not really regulating foods at all. But yeah, what do you think the Obama administration will, what kind of leadership do you think they'll provide?
Well, I've been writing about it on my blog at Huffington Post. A couple of things. There's a lot of concern that he's been insulated from information about GMOs. He made a comment that GMOs have had a lot of benefits to agriculture when in fact it's...
Not really.
No, it hasn't. I mean, there's some advantages to farmers that don't have to weed by hand because they can spray over the crops, but
yeah,
it hasn't increased the bottom line for farmers according to USDA reports. It hasn't improved their yield. And in fact, the United States government spends $3 to $5 billion extra per year on additional price supports to prop up the prices on the GM crops no one wants.
Right.
Now, surrounding him are, for example, Michael Taylor, who's on the transition team. Michael Taylor was the person in charge of FDA policy when GMOs were approved and RBGH was approved.
Not good.
He was Monsanto's former attorney and later Monsanto's vice president.
Okay.
He's got, there's another person that was on Monsanto's board that was a member of his advisory team. He is originally considering Governor Vilsack on the USDA, and Vilsack was the biotech governor of the year. He was considering, he still may be considering Dennis Wolf, the Pennsylvania Secretary of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. Wolf recently tried to make labeling of milk products free from RBGH illegal to say that they don't use RBGH.
Oh, my goodness.
And he had to be basically that had to be stopped by the governor of Pennsylvania because there was an outcry from all over the country. But they still allow, they still require now, because of Dennis Wolf, they still require that if you're going to say that you're RBGH free, that you include a disclaimer that according to the FDA, there's no difference in the milk that's treated versus the milk that's not treated. And that disclaimer was written by Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, while he was at the FDA. And it's also a lie, because the FDA's own scientists acknowledge that the milk is very different.
And it's on my eggnog. I had a little glass of eggnog before this, and I was reading it. And that's exactly the statement that's on there. I was just laughing.
Yeah, and that's the Michael Taylor statement, written by Monsanto's former attorney. He wrote a white paper suggesting, it wasn't required, but it was suggesting that if someone's going to label their product as free from RBGH, that they include that sentence. And so, Pennsylvania has decided to make it law. So did Ohio. Now is Kansas. And so we're in a situation where it's kind of like a coup d'etat, you know, a coup over the science and a coup over public awareness in terms of consumer labeling. It's really a shocker.
Okay, well then, you know, forget Obama, forget the, you know.
Well, I wouldn't forget. Well, first of all, let me just say, he told us he was going to require mandatory labeling of genetically engineered foods. So what I did is I write about the problems of the Obama administration, but I say at least he's going to do that, and frankly, that's really the main thing, because if as soon as, let's say he puts in a law that's real labeling, you know, where everything derived by GMOs is labeled and it doesn't have these horrible loopholes like they have in Australia, New Zealand, or Japan. So if we can get him to do comprehensive labeling, then as soon as the labeling law is announced, saying, let's say, okay, in 18 months everything has to be labeled, the rats will leave the ship. The food companies will remove the genetically engineered foods from their food ingredients from their packaged products, because they know they're going to have to label it as GMO, and they know that more than half the Americans say they would avoid eating GMOs if labeled. So we can get rid of that of the food supply simply by consumer choice based on labeling. So I'm willing, you know, that's where my focus is, because he already told us he's going to label it. My petition on my site is saying, please, it's not asking him to please fulfill his promise. I'm going to assume he's going to fulfill his promise. It's saying, and when you do fulfill your promise, make sure it's comprehensive, meaningful labels, and this is what that means.
Right.
And so go to responsibletechnology.org and sign up to get Obama to give us what we want.
Well, that's true. That's very true. Once things are labeled and accurately labeled, then really the rest of the rest of it is just is all economics.
Right.
It's just going to be straightforward. Well, what do you think the companies are going to do in terms of are they going to try to not have the GMO in the food supply, but then still have it feeding animals that go into the food supply?
Oh yeah. First of all, they'll try and do that. So we want our requirement for labels is that any animal that's been fed GMOs, that's been injected by a GMO, that is genetically engineered itself, should be labeled. That's the big loophole in Europe that keeps GM animal feed pumping into that continent. They'll also try and say every time there's a new concern for the environment or for energy, they'll try and recast GMOs as the solution to that.
Right.
So it's now cast as a solution to global warming. It's cast as a solution for biofuels, for increased salt salinization. It's like everything that they can think of, although it's becoming more and more of a myth when they realize that actually they have so gotten wrong this concept of how DNA functions that their chances of them successfully and predictably manipulating the DNA at this point in life is zero. It may be okay. Maybe sometime in the future they can do it when they truly understand the language of the DNA, but we're nowhere near that at this point.
Yeah, the golden rice idea was to it's really a marketing campaign.
You know,
they're going to say they're going to wipe out childhood blindness by putting vitamin A in this, or the precursor to vitamin A in the rice, and then they fail to to let you know that the child would have to eat how many pounds of rice a day?
7 pounds.
Seven pounds of rice a day.
Well, oh yeah, and also by the way,
I love that one.
And you also need other elements in your diet so that you can absorb it. And if you had all those other elements, you would be living, you know. You'd be in poverty.
And so for $25,000, we could just give the kids a supplement.
I know.
I love that one.
$100 million, you know,
to develop this rice
that
won't work.
You know, but just spend $25,000 a year, and you've been able to give, you know, 2 pills a year every 6 months, a high dose of vitamin A, and you've solved that problem. But it's not as meaningful for their public relations campaign.
Well, basically, I'll just make the statement that their marketing people have no science background. They're really stepping in it.
But it doesn't matter, because the thing is, they speak it so loudly and so consistently.
Yeah.
You know, the lies that are coming out about GMOs have been nonstop. And, you know, I remember hearing the quote from Dan Glickman, who was the Secretary of Agriculture under Clinton. He said, he just was basically repeating the biotech myth. He said, the attitude I saw from the biotech side was the technology was good and that it was almost immoral to say that it wasn't good because it was going to solve the problem
for human race
and feed the hungry.
Save the world.
Yes, exactly. He said, you felt like you were an alien disloyal by trying to present an open-minded view. And he actually raised the issue of a little bit of concern in his speeches. He said before that it was just written into his speeches. He tried to, you know, ad-lib and say what he really felt. And he said he got slapped around in the administration.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what a lot of people don't understand, that the politicians they have a script that they have to go on.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Sarah Palin, you know, she was brought back to the script, you know.
Yeah.
So, even what you hear on CNN and your other news things it's highly scripted.
You can keep them out of trouble. You can see Dan Glickman talking about his situation in a fantastic new film. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called The World According to Monsanto.
No, huh?
It's phenomenal. I'm in it. I was interviewed by this award-winning filmmaker. She called me a few years ago, and I get a lot of film crews coming to my little town in Iowa, and typically, or I get them on the road, and I end up spending a lot of time with them, giving them the background of GMOs and who to interview, and sometimes I spend a lot of time with them in terms of preparation. She was so well prepared. She was miles ahead of anyone I had talked to. She was traveling and speaking to all the people that I've written about and more. And so her film, which is now, you can get it at MonsantoFilm.com. We distribute it, is so phenomenal. It is absolutely riveting. Now, one thing about her film is after an hour and 49 minutes of this really powerful documentary, she doesn't give a solution to the situation. So what we did is we packaged the film with a 3-minute What We Can Do, which is about our tipping point and our campaign for health in America. I also have an audio CD in there, which is all about the health risks that people can make copies of and give away. There's a brochure in there. The Your Milk on Drugs video is in there. So we basically turned this powerhouse film, which creates more outrage and motivation to do something about GMOs at any time in someone's life, and we equip them now with some effective solutions. We also have handout materials so that if people hold house parties or sponsor free public showings, they can distribute the handout materials so that it drives people to participate in effective community action against GMOs, like a GM-free school campaign that we have as a turnkey program.
Would you like to take a minute right now to repeat your contact information for our listening audience?
Sure. At responsibletechnology.org, that's from the campaign, you'll see the information about the campaign for healthier eating in America. At responsibletechnology.org, you can download a shopping guide, you can become a member of the campaign, it's free, or you can be a paying member. You can get a free monthly newsletter, which is usually a syndicated column article, and you can look at the archived ones up there. You can also go to the site and get information on how to avoid GMOs in restaurants. That also links over to our product site, which is seedsofdeception.com, which has videos and audios and DVDs. But you can also listen to a lot of things for free. We've got free videos online, free podcasts to download, plenty of material. We have a free scripted PowerPoint presentation so we can clone ourselves so that other people can give talks on GMOs. So we're basically fully equipped now with the information package for the right brain, the left brain, the visual learner, the audio learner, so that we can now focus on distribution. And we invite everyone to get on there to get involved so that you can tell your friends, your loved ones, your colleagues, the public about the dangers, because we are in a position ourselves working together to get rid of these dangerous things. It is easier to solve the problems of GMOs than virtually any other major health or environmental problem, because just a small percentage of consumers, maybe even 5% of U.S. consumers, protecting themselves by avoiding GMOs can drive it out of the market.
Yeah, and I just signed up for your GMO newsletter.
Great.
And that, I mean, that's very important because, you know, if you want to stay up with things these days, it's better to have it come to your email box than any other way, because all of us are so busy with our email box that we don't have time to do a lot of other things sometimes. So, you know, but I want to stay up with this. I want to know, and, you know, hopefully we'll do more interviews in the future because, you know, I'm seeing one side of things with the Morgellons and the, you know, our holistic practice, seeing all the problems with the GI gut bacteria, and so we need to keep in touch. And the problem I think in society is that there are so many fragmented specialists, and yet they don't always know what other people know.
We need to synthesize
what we know and bring it together, and I think these radio shows are a great way to do that.
And that was sort of one of the blessings of my book, Genetic Roulette. I worked with more than 30 scientists over 2 years to gather all of the known health risks of GMOs
mm-hmm.
and put them into these two-page spreads with an executive summary on the left and details on the right, so that it was all there for people to easily skim through.
Very easy. Your book is wonderful
to
read.
So when I looked at the whole thing and I just kept reading it and seeing it, I started making connections. And there's a section in it called Connecting the Dots.
Mm-hmm.
And there I was the first person, I think, to put together the fact that those who were getting allergic reactions from handling this genetically engineered cotton were getting the identical reactions from those that were sprayed with BT.
Mm-hmm.
I put together, you know, just interesting things that there's a whole series of problems that relate to the liver that goes through many different adverse findings. There's a whole series of things that have to do with the digestive tract. So,
nobody had interviewed all the scientists, they wouldn't have put this together.
Exactly. So,
it's very important work.
Having this, even though I'm not a scientist, I presented something valuable back to the scientists because
right.
if they told me one thing, I could say 12 other things that I had heard, which enhances their understanding.
Yeah, well, this is a really, really interesting topic. You know, I my whole family is involved in science and also agriculture, and one of my cousins is a very prominent geneticist. So, you know, this whole topic is extremely important. I would really encourage people to get your book, Genetic Roulette, like you said, the talking points, the way the book is laid out is extremely user-friendly, and, you know, we hope to have you back on the show in the future, because I think public awareness of this is absolutely critical.
And let's stay in touch about the Morgellons issue. I'd love
yes.
to get from you all your references, because I'm going to be traveling for the next two or three months, but when I get back, I would love to do a bigger investigation of the links between Morgellons and GMOs.
Well, we would love to help you with that. Well, this has been Temple of Health Radio Show. We've been interviewing Jeffrey Smith on his new book, Genetic Roulette, The Documented Health Risks of Genetically Engineered Foods. Thank you so much, Jeffrey, and have a great day.
Thank you, too.
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plastikos and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education. Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.